radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul from BlakeRadio.com.
The opinions and views expressed by the host and guest are not necessarily the views and opinions of the Blake Radio Network. Broadcasting to the world.
Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul from BlakeRadio.com.
Time, but space is a place that only a human being locates. Where there's so much information to take, there you enter an entirely new phase. Once you get on the internet, become World Wide Web.
Welcome to the Cyberspace Sanctuary, a safe house for your mind. I'm your host and facilitator, Junius Ricardo Stanley, inviting you to stay tuned for interesting interviews, news you can use, and programming designed with you in mind. Free your mind, the rest will follow, right here from the Cyberspace Sanctuary on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul.
Cyberspace is the place. Cyberspace is the place.
When someone says, you can't do it. And I think that it would seem that that comes out of my background as a black, as a woman, as an American, having been told on so many levels that I couldn't do it. It would seem that that's where that originates, that response. But I don't know. It may be deeper than that. That's pretty deep.
Mm-hmm.
But it may be, I find that statement, you can't, offensive to the human spirit. I think that we can be anything. We have no idea where we're going as a species. The greatest genius says that we have never used more than 18% of our mental machine. So to say to a young black girl or a young white boy or a young Asian child or Hispanic or Native American, you can't, is to deny maybe why we're here. Maybe this entire experience is a series of lessons to learn that you can. Yes, you can. Sometimes people forget that the most important of all the virtues is courage. Because without courage, you can't practice any other virtue with consistency. You can't be consistently kind or true or generous or open or fair-minded without courage pushing you, keeping you on track.
You're listening to the Cyberspace Sanctuary on the Blake Radio Network with Junius Ricardo Stanton. Stay tuned. Welcome to the Cyberspace Sanctuary on the Blake Radio Network's Rainbow Soul. My name is Junius Ricardo Stanton. Thank you for logging on. We started off the program with a mix. Sly and the Family Stone, Everybody is a Star. And we mixed Maya Angelou, and she talked about purpose and courage. And that is an apt introduction for today's program as we talk to two young ladies, Mayori Carmel Holmes, who is the artistic director and the producer of the Black Star Film Festival, which will take place in Philadelphia from August 2nd through the 5th. She's a filmmaker herself, and she knows firsthand the trials and tribulations of trying to get an independent film made and exhibited. She'll be joined by Jasmine Burton, who is a journalist, a burgeoning writer in her own right, a fiction writer, who is also helping promote and market the Black Star Film Festival. We'll speak with them following these messages and an extensive public service announcement regarding the Save Nubia project. So don't go anywhere. You're logged on to the Cyberspace Sanctuary. It's a safe house for your mind here on the Blake Radio Network's Rainbow Soul. So don't go anywhere.
We'd like to welcome everybody checking in from Real Media Player, from Windows Media Player, from iTunes. We want to encourage everyone to log into our website, which is blakeradio.com, and become familiar with how you can access our broadcast directly from our website. And vice versa, those of you who check in directly from the Blake Radio Network, become familiar with how you can also access us through Real Media Player, through Windows Media Player, and iTunes by logging into their radio tuner guides and doing a search for us in the talk radio genre. You're listening to Rainbow Soul, talk radio at its best.
Broadcasting to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul.
Junius Ricardo Stanton here with some truly great news. The Blake Radio Network has officially released the new Rainbow Soul iPhone and Android apps worldwide. Now, there's also an HTML version for all other cell phones. The apps can be accessed from www.blakeradio.com on the Rainbow Soul page or directly from the iPhone App Store or Android Market. These apps will allow you to lock in exclusively to the Rainbow Soul broadcast with a touch of a button. These acquisitions complete the development and release of all the apps for the Blake Radio Network family of channels, which includes Rainbow Soul, the Alt Talk channel, and Music Massage, an eclectic mix of R&B, jazz, soul, and reggae slow jams for your listening edification and entertainment. So take full advantage of this opportunity for connectivity and mobility by downloading your respective app from your source. Continue listening to the Blake Radio Network's Rainbow Soul and Music Massage.
I am Professor Maynu M. Pym. Our Save Nubia campaign is focused on preserving the ancient African civilizations of Kush and Nubia, which must be considered World Heritage Sites under threat. These great civilizations along the Nile in Northeast Africa are in jeopardy of having their central areas permanently flooded. Currently, the Sudanese government is in the process of building four new dams in northern and central Sudan to create hydroelectricity. However, local Sudanese groups in these regions oppose these dam projects because they will destroy their homelands and way of life along the Nile. The Nubians, the Manasseh, and the Amri are among the groups that oppose these projects. In fact, the World Commission on Dams examined over 1,000 of the 45,000 large dams around the world. And in its report, the commission made it clear that no dam should be built unless the local affected communities agree to the project and are consulted at each stage of the construction process. And of course, none of this is taking place in the Sudan. For example, the people were not even consulted about the recently completed Marowei Dam at the Fourth Cataract, which was completed in 2008 and created a 108-mile-long reservoir, which displaced about 70,000 people and flooded a minimum of 2,500 unexcavated ancient Kushite archaeological sites. The Manasseh and other displaced groups still have not been compensated for the flooding of their homeland. Let's be clear that electricity is an uncontested factor for a country to develop, but the means to acquire this electricity is often contested and controversial. There are other viable forms of energy available in the Sudan, such as solar panels and wind turbines. But these alternate sources of energy have not been considered because they are not as financially lucrative for those involved. The Save Nubia campaign is in support of the local people in their efforts to save their homeland. The four proposed dams in the Sudan will each have a devastating impact on this archaeological region. The second through the fifth cataracts represent a central corridor of the ancient Kush and Nubia regions. Despite Sudanese sites of El Kuru, Nuri, Jebel Barkel, Dongola, Bagrawiya, and Merol, which yield 223 pyramids in Sudan, there is still much more in this vast archaeological region that is not known because of the lack of excavation work and field research. For example, during the construction of the Merowei Dam, there was a shocking discovery of 700 brand new, previously unknown archaeological sites that were found in just 1 year, which all are now flooded. Our Save Nubia campaign has several goals. One, to raise funds to conduct ongoing field research to thoroughly document the historical significance of this region. Two, press forward with our campaign until this rich archaeological region is considered by UNESCO as a World Heritage Site under threat. Three, assist the local Sudanese people in the second and third cataract areas to build 2 to 3 museums to help highlight and preserve their heritage and historical contributions to the world. Join our campaign. Assist us in making a difference in preserving ancient African history and culture. Our voice is the call of the local Sudanese people who have asked that we help to amplify the volume of their struggle for cultural survival. The Nubians say that they have seen the negative impact of the Aswan High Dam in southern Egypt and the Merowei Dam in northern Sudan, and they don't trust the current dam construction collaboration between the Sudanese government on the one hand and the Chinese construction companies on the other. The 2007 Kashbar Dam massacre is an example of this grassroots effort of cultural resistance to the dams. We cannot allow the historical evidence of African greatness to be destroyed on our watch. I trust that you will use your time, your talent, and your resources to contribute to our campaign to save the ancient African civilizations of Kush and Nubia. Join our cause.
Patience, Professor Griff, you're listening to Junius Ricardo Stanton. Straight up, we're teaching you all those things you need to know from the neck up, all right? We're definitely doing a checkup from the neck up. This is Professor Griff from Public Enemy, the ex-minister. I'm out. Peace.
Our guests on today's program are Maori Carmel Holmes, who is the artistic director and the producer of the Black Star Film Festival, which will take place in Philadelphia from August 2nd through the 5th. And also Jasmine Burton, who is in charge of PR, and she is one of the people who are helping to promote and make folks aware of this exciting new event in Philadelphia. Welcome, ladies, to the program.
Thank you.
First of all, tell us a little bit about yourself, starting off with Maori, and tell us how you became the artistic director, and share us a little background, because this is a monumental undertaking.
Oh, thank you. I started the festival initially as just a short program. I was going to curate a couple of films over a series of days that I knew I wanted them to focus on Africa. I actually thought I was going to do four African films from all over the continent. And as I was doing my research for that, I just started looking at all these films that I had heard about and hadn't seen because they hadn't come to Philadelphia, or I'd actually seen them in other festivals the year before and knew that they hadn't shown widely. And I just started thinking, like, we should have a festival. Why don't we have one?
Had you ever produced a festival previously or a prior occasion?
I have. I've done some curating of films. I curate a social justice film series called King a Lot with another filmmaker. And before that, I had been the director of the Black Lily Film and Music Festival, which was a festival of women in film and music.
Oh, okay. Well, how did you hook up with Jasmine?
Jasmine actually interviewed me as a filmmaker. I had a film called See Not Heard back in 2005, 2006. And Jasmine was working for the Tribune at that time, and we met when she was interviewing me about that film, and we've stayed friends and in touch ever since.
Oh, okay. So, Jasmine, your background is in journalism, is that correct?
Yes, I started off as a journalist working for local and pretty much local papers from Buffalo to Philadelphia. And when I moved here to Philadelphia about 7 years ago, Maori was one of the first artists that I met. And I was immediately interested in her work and really impressed with some of the things that she's doing in the city. Funny enough, we both grew up in Atlanta but didn't meet each other until we got here. So sort of kismet, sort of a meeting, I guess, that had to take place eventually. And when she mentioned the film, I volunteered to help out with the public relations and marketing outreach because it's something that I really am excited about and that I really believe in. I think it's a festival that we really need here in the city. So.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, as a journalist, you're equipped to do PR, promotions. So is that something that you branched out? Are you still a working journalist, a working writer, or have you moved in to form your own PR and events planning promotion company?
It's funny. I'm sort of in flux. So sort of fell into PR by mistake. I took a full-time job at a university doing public relations and at the same time tried to maintain a freelance career writing for local papers like the Philadelphia Gay News and the Philadelphia Weekly. And I didn't think that PR would be something that sort of stuck, but working with artists like Maori sort of changed my mind about that. So I am a semi-independent public relations consultant and marketing consultant, just now branching out into possibly developing my own practice. And so I also, through this journey and through these transitions, found that in addition to being a journalist, I'm a fiction writer, so I'm also toying with that. So I'm sort of in flux right now. In this moment, I'm doing PR.
Mm-hmm. So how do you find the time to devote to your craft as a fiction writer?
That's another good question. It's a tricky balance. So I try to write first thing in the morning, whatever comes off the top of my head, and my afternoons and evenings are dedicated to my full-time work and my consulting work.
Mm-hmm. Maori, you're a filmmaker, so how did you get into film? Did you go to film school, or is this something that piqued your interest and you pursued it on your own?
I did go to film school. I was receiving a master's in fine arts in Philadelphia Temple, and I had come to that after being interested for a long time. And at first was mostly interested in documentaries, but I had a background in theater and dance and in visual art, and just found myself, you know, also interested in narrative work. I've directed a couple music videos and a couple short films.
Well, your background as a visual artist and obviously theater, you got a feel for audiences, you know, the give and take from the audience and taking direction. How have you been able to transpose that into film?
I think they're, you know, completely related. Film is, a modern medium, and it, draws upon the foundation of theater and the foundation of visual arts. And so I feel, like I was adequately trained to enter into the space. And actually, one of the reasons I started working in film was because I had so many interests and I wanted to do something that would bring them together. And it felt like, I have interest in fashion, I have interest in, photography, drama, and film was a place where all these things could come together, history, writing, and put them all in one place.
The technology is impacting filmmaking. And so when you went to film school, did they focus on film itself, or did they prepare you for the digital age? Are you up to speed on all the, HD, the various cameras? And if they didn't prepare you for it, how did you get the practice and the acumen to do what you're doing?
Well, I kind of feel like Jasmine. I don't practice as a filmmaker as much as I'd like. I've moved into the space as an arts administrator, which I sort of fell into as well, and have been, with my free time curating as of late. I've not done any filmmaking since 2007, unfortunately, and so that's not true. I've done short documentaries here and there, mostly kind of like for the tourism office. I've done some projects with them, and I've done costume design, but I haven't like made my own, feature project since about 2007, I'd say.
Mm-hmm.
But I went to grad school when this was all shifting, and so they actually did train us on film, and we did learn video, and specifically, I went to school where, we were no longer editing film, so I don't know how to edit film, but I do know how to shoot film and, was trained, how to, what to seek out to do mm-hmm. color correction and all those mm-hmm. kinds of things. But I do have training in digital, but I'm sort of pre-HD, so I don't have HD training. Some of that I've learned just by practicing and working with younger filmmakers.
Mm-hmm. Now, as a filmmaker yourself, was your empathy for the craft and some of the things that you had to go through to get your films produced, is that what is driving you to have this film festival, to give an airing for young and up-and-coming artists like yourself who need exposure?
Absolutely. I think that, a lot of filmmakers, when they start their projects, they're making work because it isn't in the theater. It's not at the local movie house or cinema or whatever. And so they're like, I want to make a film that addresses blah, 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 that shows people who look like me, who are talking about this history of mine, et cetera. And that's what they make the work for. But then unfortunately, because of the way that our system is set up, it's challenging to get distribution. It's challenging to get the work in front of the people that it's intended for. And so film festivals are often that space. But we need all different kinds of festivals, because sometimes, like, the mainstream city festival isn't going to film work that they don't relate to. And so, that's why there are Black film festivals or Latino film festivals and women's film festivals, that kind of thing.
A lot of our people, Black people, are major consumers of media, but from what I see, we lack media literacy. We don't understand the industry. A lot of times you talk about film and they automatically think the Hollywood model. That's not something the vast majority of Black videographers or filmmakers have access to or entree to. So share your experience as a filmmaker in this quote-unquote alternative or outsider mode as a non-Hollywood, non-corporate filmmaker?
Well, I've, you know, had the good fortune to be completely nurtured in this environment. I mean, I grew up in it, in you know, in that, no exaggeration, I really did. From high school, participating in, my mother is a playwright and tried her hand at screenwriting, and you know, worked with independent filmmakers in Atlanta, and so I, you know, grew up working on those projects. And then when I went to college, I went to Howard, and you know, was introduced to the work of Holly Garima, and
right,
you know, all of that work. And so when I came to Philly, I think one of the first people I met was Louis Messiah, and I started, you know, just kind of sitting at his feet and learning what was happening at Scribe. So this is the world that I come from. I don't know anything else. You
okay.
know.
All right. Well, you came up with through some of the top people, Holly Garima, you know, because I saw him like 20-some years ago and saw what he was doing, similar to Oscar Michaud. Louis Messiah is probably the dean of grassroots programs to empower artists, you know, visual artists, filmmakers, even audio and all, because I've taken classes at Scribe myself. So that's a good pedigree. Jasmine, how did you get involved with the art community in Atlanta or subsequently? I mean, because writing is a form of artistry. So were you hanging out with artists growing up?
Yes, very much so. Mayori and I both came up through the Atlanta Renaissance when the music that is now called Neo Soul was just being born. And although I was not directly involved in the scene, in that I wasn't performing, or I wasn't really, you know, my work wasn't out there, but it definitely helped to influence my work and helped me to mature as an artist. As a writer, I took a lot of those experiences and wrote about them. So writing is sometimes kind of private, and, you know, it helped me develop my journalistic skill and my talent for being observant. And so we know a lot of the same artists. But in terms of film, I am just, a film enthusiast. Like, I've always been really interested in the way film moves us, in the emotional reaction that I have to films like Sankofa and others that Mayori mentioned. So I would say that I'm somewhat of a behind-the-scenes type artist. I write a lot, and I help other artists like Mayori get their work out there. That's my art.
Well, tell us about the art festival, Mayori. It starts August 2nd in Philadelphia. You already told us about your what the genesis was for it. There are 40 films. Now, looking at the information, tell us about it, because it's quite unique. It's quite different from some of the film festivals or exhibitions that I've seen over the years. So what's your website so people can go up and look at, because you have the schedule there, you have everything people would want to know from soup to nuts, from A to Z, about the festival. So give us the URL for the website.
Well, it's www.blackstarfest.org.
Okay.
You can find everything there, from trailers to brief synopses of all the films that we'll be screening. And so it's a four-day festival, like you mentioned, and there are 40 films. And I think what makes this unique is that Mayori has selected films from filmmakers from Africa, Europe, North America, and South America. But all of the films are focused on a part of the African diaspora. So, for example, we have a filmmaker, Oliver Hartnett. Is that how you pronounce it, Mayori?
I think it's just Hart.
Hart, sorry. He's the director of the United States of Hoodoo. He's coming from Germany to sort of uncover or study the legacy of African spiritual traditions in the United States. And so there are several other films that sort of fall in line with that idea. Filmmakers from across the globe looking at the lives of Africans and African Americans in the diaspora.
Now I'm intrigued.
Is there any competition? I'm sorry.
No, I'm intrigued because you have 40 films. Now, I'm using your jargon, shorts, narratives, and documentaries. So explain to us what a short is, what a narrative is, and what a documentary is, and how a narrative differs from a documentary.
Well, a narrative is the film that most people think of, I think, when they think of movies or making film. It's a usually fictional story or, you know, a retelling of something nonfiction. But it is a, you know, beginning, middle, and an end.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, it has actors, it has costumes, it has, you know, these elements that we think of related to filmmaking. And documentaries are usually nonfiction. Sometimes they're ones that are slightly fictional. and those are, you know, interviews and usually based on a historical event or something, you know, newsworthy. And shorts are, can be narrative or fictional. Narrative or documentary, but they are under 30 minutes usually.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's the cutoff point, 30 minutes?
That's usually what defines a short. I mean, there's sometimes terms people use feature that for something mm-hmm. that's like 45 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
But an hour and a half is usually feature length.
Okay. Well, that's because a lot of people are now into videos and with every cell phone, smartphone being capable of doing videos. And you have the places where you can post on Vimeo, YouTube, Google. They're familiar with the 20-minute or 10-minute limit Facebook and YouTube used to have. They're used to shorts, but I just wanted to get some clarity on the others.
Where are the venues?
There's 40 films, so how many venues do you have? How many locations? And is it during the day or all on the evening or what?
We have three locations, two for the films. We're showing at the African American Museum on Thursday, August 2nd, and then we're showing at International House on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, August 3rd through the 5th. And we have a party at Art Sanctuary on the opening night on Thursday, August 2nd. And then we have a couple other parties and other venues. And the films are mostly Saturday. Well, actually, no, there's films Thursday evening and then all day Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Mm-hmm. Sophie, what?
Well, all the conversations and workshops and panels are free.
Mm-hmm.
And then the films are $8 general admission, $5 for students and seniors. And then there's special pricing for one film on Saturday night.
Okay. Now, can people buy a pass that will enable them to attend more than one or two films?
Yes. Yeah, the passes are on sale now. They're $75 for all 4 days.
How can people find out about the passes? Can they buy them online? You have e-commerce?
Yeah, they can buy them on our website. It's just an Eventbrite, you know, ticket link, basically. And so they can buy them on our website.
All right, give your URL again.
It's http://www.blackstarfest.org.
Now, I've been on the site a couple of times. You have visual images, obviously the connection with the black star, so you have a lot of visuals with people with black stars in various parts of their body. Then you have a menu. I did. So tell us how to navigate the site so that people can get to itinerary of films and then how they can order tickets or a pass for the film.
Well, the easiest thing, the page to go to is under program and then it's schedule at a glance. And that has the schedule in order of day and time with the venue. And it also has a link that has you can link to where the tickets are.
Okay.
And under there as well, you can see where the All Access Pass is, and you can buy it directly from that page.
Okay. Now, for people, because this is Internet, it's not local radio, so people who live in close proximity might want to attend, but they may not be familiar where the venues are. So mm-hmm. could you give us the locations of the venues?
Sure. There's also a link on the website that says venues, and it has the addresses and a link to Google Maps so they can get the directions directly from there. But the African American Museum is located at 701 Arch Street in Old City, and International House is located at 3701 Chestnut Street in University City. And then Art Sanctuary is located at 628 South 16th Street in Center City.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Jasmine, what are some of the challenges that you face promoting an event like this, particularly a fairly maiden endeavor?
I have to say, there haven't been many challenges at all. I think a lot of the artistic community and the media here and even nationally are familiar with Maori's work. Before producing the Black Star Film Festival, she was involved in producing the Black Lily Film and Music Festival. And based on that and based on her film work, The Seen Not Heard, and her overall dedication and involvement in the artistic community here in Philadelphia, and I guess in the tri-state area, this has been really receptive. We actually had media getting in touch with us to speak with Maori about this festival. And I think it really fills a gap in the film festivals that are available here in Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
There are several, but the concept that Maori has come up with really gives people who are interested in independent film an opportunity to see some of these narratives and shorts that they may never see, that they may, might not be on HBO or Netflix or accessible to a wider audience. So I'm glad to say that there haven't been too many struggles.
Mm-hmm.
People
Good.
Seem to
Good.
Be really receptive.
Good. Now, you're also accepting applications for volunteers.
Yes.
Who are you
yes.
looking for, and how do they go? If someone wanted to be a part of this and volunteer, what are you looking for, and how do they go about doing it?
Well, we're just looking for enthusiasm and interest, in people, people who like to speak with others and who would be, in a good mood and, eager to help out. On our website, under opportunities, there is a tab that says volunteer, and people can go directly to that, and that's how they can find out about volunteering. And I can give you the exact URL. It's blackstarfest.org/opportunities/volunteer. And so we're basically just looking for people who have at least a three-hour shift to work on one of the days of the festival. If you work one three-hour shift, you can get two tickets to a screening of your choice. And if you work three consecutive shifts, well, not consecutive, but if you work three shifts total, which is 9 hours, then you get a festival pass.
Okay. Now, you're also looking for vendors. So what type of vending opportunities are there for the festival?
Well, the vending opportunities are, at this point, a little limited. We already have quite a few signed up. But if people are interested, they can just email us star@blackstarfest.org. We're looking for, we can vend anything really in the space, food, clothing, gifts, jewelry, whatever, people sell and think would be interesting for our audience. But I would encourage people to, get in touch with us no later than the end of this week, because we really got that pretty full as it is.
Okay, so now the programs that I do are on demand. So give a date for the deadline, because it can go up today, but somebody might hear it a couple of days from now, a couple of days prior to the festival itself. So give a deadline date so they know not to call if it's past that.
Oh, okay. Well, any people interested in vending would need to be in touch with us before July 20th.
Okay. All right. Now, one of the things about festivals is they generally give you an opportunity to meet the director or the filmmaker or the writer, or maybe some of the participants, the actors, what have you, and you have that opportunity here, so tell us about that.
Absolutely. I'm going to go back to the schedule and just make sure I have them all correct. I'm going to read the films that the directors will be present on Friday, August 3rd.
And give the dates, too. I mean, the days that they, you know, so folks will know.
On Friday, August 3rd, leaked last night at the Five Spot, director Mike Dennis will be present. That's at 2:30 p.m. at International House. Breathe Again, the director Kurt Orderson will be here all the way from South Africa. His film is at 6 p.m. at International House. On Saturday, August 4th, there's a shorts program that features a film called A Lover's Call, directed by Najma Nuruddin, Bump by a director named Rodney Lee, and Mist by a director all the way from Jamaica named Michelle Furia. And that is at 12:30 p.m. at International House. All three of those directors will be present. And then I want to give a plug. This is not a film, but it's a conversation with a Sundance Award-winning director named Ava DuVernay. She's the first black woman to win Best Director at Sundance. And she's going to be doing a conversation that's funded by the Leeway Foundation, so it's free to everyone. And she'll be speaking at 2:15 at International House and talking about her work and also screening an exclusive preview of her film, Middle of Nowhere, which comes out in October. Mm-hmm. Then at 4:10, we'll be screening United States of Hoodoo, and the director, Oliver Hart, as Jasmine mentioned earlier, will be here from Germany for a Q&A after his film. Then after that, there's a conversation between a director and a subject, which is something people don't often get a chance to witness. And so we'll be showing a preview of a documentary on the singer Reese, and she and the film's director, Steve Zagans, will be present for a conversation about their process. And then after that, there'll be a film called Funk Jazz Cafe, Diary of a Decade, The Story of a Movement. And that director, Jason Orr, will be here from Atlanta for his Q&A at 8 p.m. On Sunday, we have another special program. There's a short film called The Connection, and that'll be screening with the conversation with its director, Nisa Ra, at 1 p.m. And then there'll be a film at 5:40 called Bad Friday, Rastafari After Coral Gardens, and that will feature the director. There are two directors for that film, and one of them, John Jackson, will be present for a Q&A. And then our closing night film is Soul Food Junkies, and that director, Byron Hurt, will be present for a Q&A after his film, which starts at 7:30.
Now, you're also having workshops, so tell us about that. Who can come? Are they free? And where are they going to be located? Where are you going to have them?
All of the workshops will be at International House. All of them are free. Anyone can come. The conversation with Ava DuVernay, again, is one of the highlights. Another one for us will be the conversation with Reese and her director. There's also a panel on the state of black independent media. That's on Friday, August 3rd at 11 a.m.
You said 11 a.m.?
Yeah.
That's going to be at the International House, too?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
And then we're also doing two staged readings of screenplays, one on Saturday, August 4th at 11 a.m., and the other on Sunday, August 5th at 11 a.m. And those will be workshops of the screenplays. So basically, there'll be actors who will read from the script, and the writers will be there, and the audience can, you know, ask questions of the writer and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know from dealing with the Scribe Video Center that there's a lot that goes into making a film.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to have an idea, usually a script, equipment. Are you dealing with that aspect of the craft, or are you just exhibiting the films and allowing the producers and directors and writers to come and talk, share their experiences in their particular film?
We're just dealing with films and you know, talking with the artists about their craft. We're not really discussing equipment or anything.
Mm-hmm. What about the process, you know, getting funding? Because, again, the Hollywood model is they have investors that invest in these films, and the corporations are in it for money, and they're part of this big conglomerate, several conglomerates. whereas the independent filmmaker really is scuffling. So we give any, will this be covered in the workshops or any obviously the Q&As will probably cover it, but do you have any intent to share that side of what it takes to be an independent filmmaker?
I mean, I think that's what will be discussed at the panel. I think that there are going to be 6 people on that panel, and they all have different experiences. There's a writer, there's a director, mm-hmm. there's a CPA, there's a lawyer, and then a couple of people who are producers. And so I think that they'll be able to speak to that, mm-hmm. and that will be the opportunity to have that conversation.
Mm-hmm. Jasmine,
I think Ava DuVernay's workshop may address that as well. I believe that she's going to talk a little bit about her strategies for success and how to, you know, create your own genre or create your own voice within a highly corporate field.
Mm-hmm. Jasmine, you're going to be going back and forth. There's going to be constant press releases, updates, things like that. So are you doing it all by yourself or will you have a staff?
I have some help. I'm working with Lauren Jane Holland, who's been a tremendous help. So it's just the two of us, not really a staff, but she and I have been reaching out to press locally and nationally. And like I said, we really haven't. It's been easier than other assignments mm-hmm. I've been given. So mm-hmm. again, I'm thankful for that.
Now, do you have a schedule? Excuse me, an itinerary to get some of the writers and directors to have access to, like, the local, like, WURD or the Low Watt FM station out in West Philly and the newspapers also?
Yes, we're working on that now. You should, as we get closer to the festival, you should see stories in local press, including the Philadelphia Weekly, WURD, possibly we're working on a piece for the Inquirer. So we should, you know, the word will spread not only by mouth but through media placements.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, with your contacts with Philadelphia Weekly and some of the independent papers, have you struck up a relationship with them? Are you going to barter and do advertising or?
No, with most of the papers locally, I have an existing relationship with mm-hmm. a lot of reporters.
Mm-hmm.
And so my existing contacts with them, coupled with their knowledge of Mayuri's work and her quality of work, have made a lot of reporters in the area very, very interested in not only covering the festival, but covering a lot of the films that are appearing in the festival. So we've got sort of some dual press going on. Some reporters are interested in reviewing some of these films. Two of them are U.S. premieres, The United States of Hoodoo and Adopted ID, which follows a woman who returns to Haiti
after the earthquake.
Her birth parents, right. Those are, and so a lot of the film critics in the city have shown some interest in actually reviewing the films. While others are interested in writing about what it takes to put together a festival like this.
Mm-hmm. Now, you have sponsors, and putting on a film festival does cost money, so you have sponsors and underwriters. So tell us about that. How were you able to garner that type of support? And then I guess my follow-up question will be, are you planning to do this again every year, every other year, and how will you use that to grow the film festival?
Well, I think we're going to see how the festival goes this year before we announce, you know, a schedule.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't want to grow too fast and, you know, too soon, and so there's definitely, I think we might do every other year. Or we might do it again, you know, the following year. So we'll see. It's been, we had a lot of good fortune for this particular festival. People have, you know, really given us a lot for in kind. mm-hmm. And, you know, we don't expect that to happen again. So we definitely want to see how it goes this year, how many people come out, and how we're able to, you know, do that successfully. We really, really want to encourage people to come out. That's so valuable to us, because if we can show folks that, like, look, 300 people want to come to this film, then we can use that as leverage to get more support for the following
right.
years.
Right, right. Now, I know that the AMC theater chain has been working with some independent filmmakers. It's almost semi-Hollywood model. Did you approach, like, the Pearl Theater or some of the other theaters like that?
I did not. I approached International House because of my relationship with them. They had the premiere of my film, See Not Heard, and mm-hmm. ever since I've done other programming with them, including the Black Lily Festival. And, you know, they have a really wonderful screening space, you know, with superb audio and comfortable seating, and they're very, very easy to work with. So I haven't even considered the other theaters, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. No, the International House has a long history of being supportive of mm-hmm. not just African-American films, but international films.
Right.
Absolutely.
I think that goes along with the premise of the festival. I think Mayori wanted to make sure that it wasn't Hollywood, it wasn't too flashy, but sort of a grassroots-type movement that proves
mm-hmm.
that artistic communities can come together and do things independently without having to get huge corporate sponsorships from AMC or larger theaters. And so far, it's worked to our advantage. So.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I commend you for that, because a lot of people would have just basically given up if the corporate theaters slammed the door in their face. I mean,
right.
You know, Mayori, from working with Holly Garima, you know, for Sankofa, he went around using the Oscar Micheaux model of renting out the theaters and then promoting it, and the people would come. He didn't have the advertising or the support or the budget that, you know, corporate films do. So
mm-hmm.
I commend you for doing what you're doing. I'm just hoping that the community at large, whether they're in Philadelphia, South Jersey, Northern Delaware, or even folks who listen in close proximity, will come and be supportive. Speaking of being supportive, are you accepting donations? I mean, can people, somebody just send you a check or money order or something?
Yes.
Definitely.
Yes, we are definitely accepting donations. We did a very quiet individual donor campaign because we just thought it would be best this year not to do a public one. We didn't want people to think the festival wasn't happening, and it definitely is. But if we get donations, you know, the more we can do, you know, things like gift bags for our filmmakers and, you know, just kind of expanding our reach in terms of promotional items and the care that we can take of people who come.
Mm-hmm.
So there will be a link on the website today. So, you know, probably by the time you post the show, there'll be a link on our website under it'll just say, you know, contribute or donate.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. Jasmine,
yeah.
You know, Mayori just mentioned gift packages and giveaways and promotions. That's an integral part of event planning, marketing, and promotions. So how much thought went into that, and given your resources, I mean, how do you plan to handle that?
Well, right now, for some of our live radio spots, we have been giving away free passes to some of the headlining films,
mm-hmm.
or we're also doing a few parties. Some are VIP-only events. We've been giving away passes to those as well. But right now we're working together to put together our gift bags and other promotional materials. But because we're sort of, you know, a grassroots production and our budget is, you know, our budget doesn't make room for doing a whole lot of promotional stuff, but we are definitely interested in doing giveaways or even partnering with merchandisers in the city who might want to donate to our gift bags.
Okay, so they can contact you for that on the website, right?
Or they can contact
yeah.
me. Yeah, they can contact us on the website, or if anyone is interested in entering into that type of relationship, they can email me directly at Jasmine, which is spelled J-A-Z as in zebra, M as in Mary, Y-N, at Black Star Fest.
Okay. Give that again.
Sure. Jasmine, J-A-Z, as in zebra, M as in Mary, Y-N, at Black Star Fest, one word, .org.
All right, ladies, we're almost out of time. Any closing remarks, anything that you want our audience to know about you or the fest that is imperative that you get it out now?
Again, I just want to really encourage people to come, even if they just come to the free events that are, you know, happening at International House. We really, really want to show people that this festival is needed in the city, that people want to see multicultural work, that they want to see, you know, diverse folks working in the industry. So I just really want to make sure that people come out and that they support us. And also that they realize that this focus is on independent film.
Mm-hmm.
That's really important to me.
Mm-hmm. Well, elaborate on that a little. We've been talking about it, but since you put it that way, I just elaborate on that, what you mean by that.
Well, just that, I mean, there's no knock to Hollywood at all. And, I mean, I think we would all love to have a successful film that is mainstream. But this festival is focusing on work that is not in the mainstream, that's been produced independently, and that, you know, really deserves a chance to be seen by its intended audience.
Mm-hmm.
Jasmine?
Well, you know, there's a quote by Toni Morrison that I really like that says, if there's a book that you want to read but it hasn't been written yet, then you must write it. And I think a lot of the filmmakers that are included in this festival are those type of artists who have decided to, you know, forego the mainstream and write about issues and stories that are close to their heart. And I also commend Mayori for doing the same thing. She had a vision for a festival that wasn't being done, and she decided to do it. And, you know, with a limited amount of time and a limited budget, we have, or she has pulled together an amazing team, and we're working really hard to make this festival one that people will want to attend for the next 10 years, for years to come. So we really hope that folks will come out and join us and see a great film and buy from our vendors, and hopefully we can do this again next year.
Now, will the filmmakers have copies of their films there? Because that's one of the critical issues. One of the reasons you're doing the film is to give the festival is to give them exposure. And I years ago, we used to, my wife and I used to go to Atlanta for the National Black Arts Festival. We attend the films, the screenings, what have you. And unfortunately, you go home and you didn't have access to the film, and you couldn't get it at, you know, Blockbusters or a lot of other places. You'd have to special order it or something.
Right. Some filmmakers will have their films. I'm sure Jason will have DVDs, and I'm sure Mike Dennis will as well. I'm not sure about others, but the ones who will definitely will have space for that. And, you know, we don't know, but I'm sure there will be a few who will have their films on hand.
And we also encourage folks to get to know these filmmakers. A lot of them are established, though they're independent, and I'm sure that you can buy their films on their websites or contact them after the festival, continue to follow their work, and I'm sure you can gain access to their films that
mm-hmm.
way.
Okay, give us the URL, and then we'll let you go with our gratitude.
Again, thank you so much. It's www.blackstarfest.org.
Okay.
Thank you so much for having us.
All right, thank you. Thank you. All right. Again, if you want any information about the upcoming Black Star Film Festival, August 2nd through the 5th, log on to www.blackstarfest.org. That's about it for today's program. Until next time, this is Junius Ricardo Stanton reminding you, stay strong.
Cyberspace is a place that no army with artillery invades. Where no military.
You've been listening to the Cyberspace Sanctuary.
A Safe House for Your Mind on the Blake Radio Network with Junius Ricardo Stanton. Thank you for logging on. We invite you to tune in again and engage in mental decolonization. Free your mind, the rest will follow.
That no corporation incorporate, no denomination faith dominate, and no court is going to try any case.